Probably. Okay, so let's get started over here. We're holding on Mamzayin Amud Aleph, 7 lines from the bottom. We were discussing the question, when a goy acquires land in Eretz Yisrael, does that take away the requirement of Trumos and Maestris on it? Which eventually we're going to relate that back to our Mishnah, which talked about a case that a person sells a field to a goy and has to now, according to Rashi, the original seller has to every year buy back the fruit to be able to give the korim. And according to Tosfos and most other Rishonim, it means that anybody who buys fruit from this goy has to take the korim out of it. So Toshma. Okay, so we had a machlokes about that. We had Rabba saying that a goy who owns land, so the land is still chayev in Meiser. On the other hand, he has the ability to acquire it to the extent that he's allowed to dig ditches and whatnot in it. And then we had Rabbi Elazar, who said the other way around. He's not allowed to dig ditches, but it is potter from Meiser. Tashma, Yisrael shalakach sadam erichachavim, a yid buys a field from a goy, actually a vishlish, before the produce in the field reached one-third of its growth, which is that's the point at which the obligation of Maaser starts kicking in.
Lakach means?
I mean, they bought it.
They bought it.
Yeah. They bought it before it grew one-third, b'chazer amachar lemishayev yishlish, and then he resold it to the guy after it reached one-third of its growth. Chayev es Maaser, then chayev and Maaser, shpain es chayev, because when it reached one-third growth, it was in the hands of a Jew. Which implies nischaiva ein lo nischaiva lo, which implies that if it had grown to one-third while the goy still owned it, it would be potter, which goes against Rabba. The answer is hacha b'eskin and b'suria. Yes, but you know what we're talking about over here? We're not talking about in Eretz Yisrael proper. We could be talking about in Suria, where the whole concept of giving ma'aser is midrabanan. So then, yes, if a goy buys land in Suria, then that's good enough to take off. Because it was mechamas for sure, not mechamas for sure, but it was kibush yachid. Yeah, kibush yachid, yeah. Because of kibush yachad, leish mekid, kibush yachad. Well, exactly. And we may as well leave it open. It's fine. Okay. So he holds that kibush yachad, that a conquest that was done by individuals rather than under the sponsorship of Beis Din, as it was over here, because he hadn't fully conquered Eretz Yisrael yet, is not considered a kibush. So therefore, Syria doesn't have the full status of Eretz Yisrael anyway, it's only Midrabanan, so therefore, fine, in that case, then a goy buying it takes away the Kedusha.
Does that imply that
one is a
counted world?
Well, Mashiach, maybe, I don't know. I mean, in Mashiach's times anyway, I mean, you have the borders of Eretz Yisrael that are described in Sefer Yechezkel it depends how you look at it. One way of looking at it is they're larger than the original ones from before, so maybe they do include Syria. The other way of looking at it is, no, they're exactly the same borders as in Parshas Maaseh, and so in that case, maybe not. I don't know. I mean, maybe they'll reconquer it then. I don't know. Anyway. Tashma, Yisrov o'erchachav v'shalach v'sad v'shutfus. Come, let's bring another proof. Another braita says that if a Jew and a goy bought a field in partnership, then what you have is tevel and chulin mu'urav and zebazeh. Then what you have is that there's tevel and chulin mixed together because the part that belongs to the goy is going to be potter from Truma and Meiser, which is, of course, why we're bringing this in over here because it seems to contradict Rabba's point that it is that should be chayv and Meiser. And so you have the chulin part, and then you have tevel, the part that the Jew grew. So Rashi explains that what it means is every single grain of wheat is half tevel and half chulin. In every single grain of wheat, you have a part that belongs to the goy and a part that belongs to the yid. So therefore, what's going to happen? So there comes a point when you divide up the grain with your partner over there. Then what happens is, what's going to happen is like this, Rashi says, anybody who buys from the goy is going to have to take maaser on their own. Because, again, half of what he bought from the goy is what previously belonged to the yid, and therefore was chayv and maaser. What is the yid going to have to do? He is going to have to also give ma'aser from it. But in both cases, both the person who buys from the goy and the Jewish partner, they're both going to have to make sure that they take truma and ma'aser out of that same crop, rather than normally you could say, for example, you know, let's say I have wheat that grew in this field, I have wheat that grew in that field. I can designate, as we learned earlier in the Masechta, I can designate one whole pile that'll all take out my truma and ma'aser from it. Here you can't do that because this one is only half chayev. Half of it is chayev, half of it is potter.
Does the Jewish partner have to take it before bought by another yid?
No, so another yid who buys it is going to be responsible on his own, yeah. But in either case, though, what's going to happen, and Rashi says, is you're going to have to take the Truma and Meiser out of that same very pile of grain. Because if you take it from other grain, then what's going to happen is you're taking from something which is chayiv on something which is half putter. Whereas like this, if you take it out of the same stack of grain, fine. Every grain of wheat is half chayiv, half putter. Proportionally, it comes out, correct.
You have to give
my son half of it. Basically. So that's
Harash. You take double.
Well, you take
on the half of the pile that belongs to you.
No, but we're talking about Rashi says this is already after you divided it. But even after you divided it, if we say ein breira, as the Gemara is going to talk about in a second,
right.
If we say there's no breira, it means that now, yes, you have a pile which is all yours, and the other one is all the guys. We can't say that to begin with. We can't say that retroactively it comes out. This is all the parts that all along belong to you, and this is all the parts that all along belong to the guys. No, it doesn't mix over here. Therefore, you have to take truma out of that and meiser out of that same pile.
Who's taking truma
from the yid? The yid is taking on behalf of his. The yid who owns it, who owns half the field, is taking half. Is taking truma and meiser out of his portion, on behalf of his portion. And any other yid who buys from the guy is going to have to do the same thing. Because we're saying that because half belongs to the yid, to the Jewish owner, and half belongs to the guy's owner.
Can you mark another like the field?
No, apparently not. Tosfos learns differently. Tosfos says that actually what you have is that the situation you have over here, Tosfos says, is that you can take meiser out of something else on behalf of the part in this pile that is considered to have belonged to you all along, and therefore the problem with it is when you take out meiser, let's say the stack of grain, let's say after you divide it up with the guy, you have a pile of containing 100 pounds, let's say. So now, fine, you're going to want to take truma, but you're going to want to take 2 pounds. The problem is, again, not all of that 100 pounds is chayiv in truma and meiser. Half of it is not. So effectively, what you're going to have, but you don't know how much. It could be 50%, it could be 25%, it could be 75%. You don't know that it's exactly mixed. So you're going to have to take out 2 whole pounds of truma from someplace else on behalf of it. The problem is, not all that 2 pounds is going to be truma. Part of it is going to be truma, part of it is going to be cholin. Same thing when it comes to meiser. So therefore, then you're going to have to take meiser on behalf of that 2 pounds, and so on and so forth, working down until you have a small enough amount that you just give the whole thing to the kohen and then to the kohen or the levy or whatever, and don't worry about it.
If the goat sells to another yid,
then that other yid
would say, the other yid know?
He would have to know. I'm buying from a goy. That's I'm buying. You have to ask the guy. I have a Jewish partner. Oh, well, then okay, in that case, then. Okay. That's what Rabbi says. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no. After they divide it up, whatever belongs to the guy is potter from Shuma and Maisa, whatever belongs to the yid is chayiv. So none of all this mix that each grain is half whole and half tevel or whatever. No,
especially
such,
if you're going and you make up, you cause this difficulty situation to make up, hey. You're going to have to be yours, not have to be yours.
If they make it, well, but making a partnership implies that right now each of them has ownership over the whole field. We're not saying this half of the field belongs to me, this half belongs to you. Yeah, if they did that, there wouldn't be an issue. We're talking about I own the whole field and you also own the whole field. We're partners.
When they divide,
but that's the thing. If we say ein breira, then you can't do that. When they divide, yeah. So that's the Gemara says. I'm kind of like the Marasova Yesh Breira or Marasova Ein Breira. So evidently, the Machlokes is that Rav Shimon Gamliel holds Yesh Breira. So we can say that when the Yid received his half of the grain all along, this was the half that was supposed to be his, and therefore his half is completely chayiv and the Goy's half is completely potter. Who Marasova Ein Breira, where the Tanakhama would hold that not. Apple to call the Amma Yesh Kinnam Lev to Chavmer to Tzolach. Yeah, man, Meiser. It seems that both of them agree that the Goy's portion is potter from Meiser. Because in principle, of course, if we know what the guy's portion is, then we're saying it's potter from meiser. Rabbah is telling us that it's chayiv. Yeah, so it's hachanami to Surya. Yeah, you could say that this meiser is also talking about Surya, because of a kibush yachad loshme kibush. Same thing we could say, if the Tana holds kibush yachad is not considered a kibush, same thing then. The guy owning it makes it potter from meiser. Not necessarily would that apply in every situation. Yeah. Amr Chivav and Toshma. Let's look at our Mishnah. If somebody sells his field to a guy, so he has to bring Bikurim, again, according to Rashi, the original seller has to go every year and buy fruit from him to bring his Bikurim, and according to Tosfos, whoever buys fruit from the guy, has to bring Bikurim, which implies that Mepnei Tikkun HaOlam ain't Midei Raisa Loi. So only Mepnei Tikkun HaOlam are we requiring that. Sounds like Midei Raisa wouldn't be necessary. if the goy does not have the ability to take away the kedusha of it as far as truma and meiser, then why shouldn't it be chayiv? Why shouldn't it be chayiv daraisa? That isn't it. Rechiv Abba was pointing out from our Mishnah.
What was the reason for
Tikkun Olam? Tikkun Olam basically means that we want in order for the proper functioning of Jewish society. So in this case, what the Tikkun Olam is, Rashi explained on the Mishnah that the Tikkun Olam is you don't want Jews to get in the habit of selling land in Eretz Yisrael to goyim. Like this, he's going to have to go to the Tircha every year, buying back the Teres, so that'll induce him to, you know what, let me not bother with that, let me just buy it back from him once and for all. Tosfos Reed actually has an interesting explanation of it. He says the situation over here is, you sold it to the guy, the fruit grew in it, then you bought it back from the guy. When other people see you're not bringing Bikurim, they're going to say, hey, you don't need to bring Bikurim. They're not going to realize that it's because a guy owned it in the middle. Therefore, okay, Tikkun Olam, we're going to make you bring the Korin.
You're watching, you know exactly what the guy
is. No, not necessarily, no.
Yeah, when he goes and he doesn't go.
Exactly. So he says because the difference between Bikurim and Terumah Nights, the various Mephoshim ask, why don't we make a Takana also that he has to buy fruit from the guy in order to give Terumah Nights? Among the various answers, Tosfos says, we're not Maturiyachim, whatever. Tosfos read says, because the difference is Bikurim are brought with a great publicity. The Mishnah in Bikurim describes how they made a whole, they had the music, and they had a whole parade and everything, yeah. It's from Anmai, so it was given in private. Yeah. Anyway. Okay, so anyway, from a Fetcher Canola main, Doraisa lawyers. Now, it's not a matter of Doraisa. And so Rashi points out the detail like this, actually, fine, we're not going to make you take Meiser. We're not going to make you take Meiser from what the guy owns because Meiser is basically without Meiser, it's also to eat. It's not a mitzvah specifically on you. So you don't have the requirement to buy it from the guy in order to give Meiser. If you buy it from the guy and we say Ein Kinyan, then yes, you're going to have to take Meiser at that point. We're not going to lachatchila be matriach you to buy from him in order to take Meiser. Bikurim is not like, the fruit is not also to eat if Bikurim aren't taken from it. It's a mitzvah to do, and it's a mitzvah that's on him, that's on the owner. Therefore, if we say like Rabbi Lazar, that the guy's ownership of it is mafkia, then fine, I understand the Chachamim still made it to Kanim, they took an olam, because we don't want people not to sell their land to goyim, or we want people to not think he's not bringing the korim or whatever, fine, then we'll make him buy it. But if we say like Rabbi, that the goy has no kinyan in Eretz Yisrael anyhow, then anyway, it's chayiv in the korim. Or midaraisa.
Also?
No, but tikkun olam means midrabanan. Daraisa. The answer is Amar Ravashi Shtei Takonis Habu. There were actually two Takonis over here. It went like this historically. Originally, when a Yid sold his field to a guy, he would bring the Korim from it Midaraisa, because the guy's ownership of it doesn't take away the Chiyuv of Terumah and Meiser, so therefore he has to bring the Korim. Kivin Dechazur Dekom Nikriyu Mezavni, but it happened that they saw that people were sometimes selling. The Sabri Mikdusha Sayu Kaiman, they thought that it still keeps its Kedusha. So what does it mean? One second. So what does it mean, Mikru Mizabni? There's a couple of different explanations. According to Rashi doesn't explicitly say what the word Mikri means, but the word Mikri usually means it sometimes happens. In other words, okay. What happened was, yeah, like Mikri. So sometimes it would happen that people would go ahead, originally, people would know you have to bring the Korin even if you sell it to a guy. So therefore, people would figure, you know what? What's there to lose? So I'll sell my field to a guy. I'll still have a mitzvah before him. They figured it still keeps the kedusha. So therefore, they figured there's no harm in selling it to a guy.
Based on
they figured it still has kedusha. Based on what Rabbi is saying.
Their own interpretation.
Yeah. So they're wrong, and that's like Hanin, but they were ignoring that and saying, look, after all, I'm not losing out the mitzvah before him. I can still join the parade with everybody else. So what's the problem? The Rambam has a different explanation of Mikri. He says that Mikri means, is Moloshim Yoker, expensive. What would happen is that because you have the din that the Yid has to buy the food from the guy in order to bring the Korim, so the guy would feel free to jack up the prices. So, Chakinu Lord Loilaisu. So, therefore, the Chachamim made a Takana, don't bring the Korim. So, again, according to Rashi, if like this, people are going to realize, hey, I don't even have a chance to bring the Korim anymore. This is serious business. I better not sell fields to a guy in the future, and I better work hard to try and buy this one back. Or, according to the Rambam, the guy now are not able to jack up the prices anymore. given the Chazur demand of stagulating the Zabin, but eventually they saw that there's still a problem with that. When somebody doesn't have money, when he can't afford it, Mizabin, he would sell it to the Goy, become a shtak on the Aver Kachavim, and then the field is just staying permanently in the hands of a Goy because then he's not able to buy it back. So then they made the takana. Let's go back to the original way d'oraisa that you should bring before him. That's why we're calling it Rapeh Chikun Olam, because the last takana was Rapeh Chikun Olam. Is let's go back to the way it was d'oraisa and cancel the previous takana.
And the takana is not a problem.
So now the Gemara says, we have a discussion as follows. Since we're talking about Bikurim, then we're going to have a sugya on the subject of Bikurim and the different kinds of sales. We know when you sell a field, there's two ways you can sell it. You can sell it that the other person doesn't own the land, he just has the right to use the fruit to the payrus, or you can have he owns the actual land. So, it's not
really a sale,
you
just take the
payrus. But that, it is a sale to that extent, he has the right to the payrus. Right. If somebody sells his field only insofar as the payrus, so let's say, for example, the buyer is going to eat the payrus for example, Rashi says 10 years, and then it'll return to the original owner. Rashi says, by the way, we have to be talking about when the yovel is not in effect, because otherwise, when the yovel is in effect, any time you sell a field, it's only the payrus, because the field goes back in yovel, which we're going to discuss yovel as we go through this again. So, Hamosha Sedeo the payrus, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Mevi the Koyer, Rabbi Yochanan says, the one who bought the payrus, the one who bought the field for those 10 years, is able to bring Bikurim from it, and he's able to read the Psukim. He's able to say in the Psukim, Asher Nafata Li Hashem, because he has a certain ownership over the land. No, or even over the land.
The one who bought
the field only for the payrus. So he's not allowed, for example, he's not allowed to dig ditches in the field.
Right.
But he's allowed to use the land as far as planting and harvesting the fruit and whatnot. So he's able, according to Rabbi Yochanan, he's able not only to bring Bikurim from whatever grows there, but also to actually say the psukim that go along with it. Because in the psukim you say, Hashem nasata li Hashem, that you gave me the land, Hashem, it's considered that he owns the land. But Rish Lakish Shama may be vain. Rish Lakish says he brings Bikurim, but he doesn't say the psukim. Why? Rabbi Yochanan made the Koyer because he holds Kenyan Paris Kenyan and Guf Gummy. Rabbi Yochanan holds that buying it for the Paris is the equivalent to buying the Guf. So you own, to a certain extent, you own temporarily the Guf of the Kaka. Therefore, you can say, this land that you gave me, Hashem. The Shlokh Hashem made the Koyer because Kenyan Paris likes Kenyan and Guf Gummy. He holds that not.
Because he doesn't have the other rights.
Ace Rabbi Yochanan or Shlokish. So Rabbi Yochanan asked Rish Lakish, how can you tell me that it's not Kikinin Aguf? We learn in a Braisa that says, the Pasuk says about bringing Bikurim, it says, Uve Secha, that you have to be happy together with everything that Hashem gave you, and Uve Secha, your household. Now we know, in very base Chazur Ishtacha, your house means your wife, therefore Malama Ch'adam Mevi Bikurim Ishtivikare. So we learn from that a person can bring Bikurim from land that belongs to his wife, the Nichse Malug, where she brought into the marriage, where he gets the payrus, he can bring Bikurim from that Bikurim, and he can read the psukim.
No,
who said anything about a Goy? The point is he has Kenyan payrus. You only have Kenyan payrus is the point. We're not talking about Jews and Goyim over here.
Right.
We're off the topic of Jews and Goyim. We're talking about Jews. But he owns the land only as far as payrus. And that's what Nixon Malug is. She owns the land, he gets the payrus. And yet we see he can say the psukim. Tosfos points out, the whole concept of Nixon Malug really is that the whole concept of payrus is only Dirabanan anyway. What are we talking about psukim over here? So Tosfos says that actually the fact of the matter is, yes, even before the official takana of Nixon Malug and payrus and why that the husband gets payrus, practically speaking, people would arrange things that way. So anyway, Omalei, Sir Rish Lakish tells him, Shiny Hosn, Dichtiv Lo Yisecha. Fine, that's different. There's Gzeres HaKosov, it says Lo Yisecha. You can't prove from that in every other case. The Ichadamri, another version, is the other way around, that Eser Shimon Ben Lakish, Lo Yisecha, that Rish Lakish used this pasuk as a question against Lo Yisecha. Or Yisecha, Malama Jodim, Yisecha, 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 so, Hosn, Lo Dichtiv Lo Yisecha, only there is that allowed because the pasuk says Lo Yisecha, implying that it's Gzeres HaKosov, Abba Ba Amalei, but generally not. Tells him, as a matter of fact, I'm using this as a marker for my din. Where am I getting my din from? The Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf. Since the Torah tells it to us over here, then I deduce that the same thing applies everywhere else as well. Not a kavachomer, just a binyanav kind of. Eisei. So he asks a question on him. Let's see. This is Rish Lakish is asking on Rabbi Yochanan. Rish Lakish is asking on Rabbi Yochanan. Tell you Bob Aderach, the Braisa says if a person was coming on the road to Yerushalayim with his Bikurim, well, Bikurim Ishta Biyada, he has his wife's Bikurim in his hand, the Shama Shameita Ishta, he hears that his wife died, maybe Bikurim. Then he can bring the Bikurim and read the Psukim. Implying Mesa Ein Loi Mesa Loi, implying only because she died, and now he owns the goof of the land, because he inherits from her. That's one of the Takanas that we learned about in Silvus, that a husband inherits from his wife. So therefore, only now that he owns the goof is he able to say the Psukim, Loi Mesa Loi, but implying that she's still alive, he can't say the Psukim. Now, according to you, he should be able to say the Psukim no matter what. Now, okay, Tosfos asks, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan just answer? Fine, I mean, we have the previous Braita that says maybe the Kodesh, right? So that a person can bring his wife's Bikurim, and then I hold like that Braita. I can disagree with this Braita if I have the other Braita to support me. Tosfos says, because Rish Lakish would answer him, maybe both Braita are talking about where the wife died. The first Braita doesn't spell it out, maybe the Kodesh is when she died, and the second one is spelling it out.
Take one next to the other?
No, not necessarily, but still, sometimes the Gemara will do that. It'll bring one Braisa that doesn't spell it out fully, and then it'll bring another Braisa that spells it out fully and say that both of them mean the same thing. The answer is no. No, the second Braisa could be telling, even if she didn't die, he's still able to bring the record. He's still able to say the Psukim. The chiddush is only if she died. Why? You would think maybe we should make a gzera that he should not say the psukim based on what Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina said. If he harvested the fruit for bikurim, the shigron biyad shliach, and he sent them in the hands of a shliach to bring them as bikurim, and then the shliach died on the way, and then the balabas just ended up bringing them himself. Maybe the Eid Akari. At that point, he brings the Bikurim, but he does not say the Psukim. Why? Shenema, Balakasa, Behemesa, because the Pasuk says you should take the Bikurim and you should bring them, implying, so it implies that the taking and the bringing have to be done by the same person. In this case, So Rashi points out that actually the Mishnah tells us in Bikurim that Bechlal, if you have the Shliach actually bring it, if the Shliach was still alive and he brought it, he Taka would not read. The Shliach never says the Psukim because he can't say Asher Nesata LiHashem, the land doesn't belong to him. He can't be saying on the Balabas's behalf. In this case, since he died and the Balabas ended up bringing it himself, in principle he ought to be able to say the Pasuk Psukim, but because he can say Hashem Nasat LiHashem, but because Lakicha and Haba were not done by the same person, then he can't. You would think then in the same case then when the man's wife died. So originally the land belonged to her. Now halfway to Yerushalayim, all of a sudden the land belongs to him. Maybe it should be the same problem. Lakicha v'avar kachad. Kamash v'lan. That's the chiddush. Rabbi Yochanan would say that's what the second braita is telling us. But not to say that if she's still alive, he can't say the psukim. But even if she's dead, he's able to say the psukim. Because in this case, Lakicha, so that's the thing. Tosfos discusses actually what Lakicha and Havar means in this connection. Tosfos says Lakicha means taking it out of the house, and Havar means bringing it to Yerushalayim, bringing it to the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, it was taken out of the house by him. He was originally going. He's bringing it now also, so we're good. We're not making Zera that it might be confused with the other case, where Shliach took it out of the house.
It depends how far he got.
No, it doesn't really matter. Well, of course, Tosfos Lakicha means taking it out of the house.
So it's not a chiddush, really.
No, but the point is, we still might have thought to make a gzeira that was similar to the case of a shliach, but no. Everyone says, well, all the time, both Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish are going according to their own svaris that we find in another din. The Itmar, because we have another discussion. If somebody sells his field during the time when Yovel is in effect, so therefore every time you sell field, you're only selling it for payers, because after all, the field itself is going to go back to the original owner in Yovel. Rabbi Yochanan may be Bikurim, Rish Lakish may be Bikurim. So Rabbi Yochanan says that you're able to bring Bikurim and say the Sukkim, and Rish Lakish says you bring the buyer during those 50 years until Yovel brings Bikurim every year, but he doesn't say the Sukkim. Again, Rabbi Yochanan may be Bikurim because Kinyan Peiros Kinyan Aguf Domi, because you own the Peiros, considered like you own the Guf. And Rish Lakish may be Bikurim because, again, Kinyan Peiros like Kinyan Aguf Domi, same thing.
So according to Rabbi Yochanan, Peiros are the Guf of the field.
Yes, yeah, basically, you own the field temporarily as far as the Peiros. Yeah.
What about the fact that you cannot build a building? How can you say it's a Guf?
Building buildings we'll get to later, actually. Wait. So now we have the machlokas in two cases. We have it in the time when the yovel is in effect, which is what we just said now, and we had before when the yovel was not in effect. Why do we need both machlokas in? Well, we need both cases. To eat my bahi, because if we only had the first case, you would say bahi kam Rish Lakish, that in that case Rish Lakish says that it's not kikinin aguf, to keep kanachas adaita the peyra kanachas, because the fact is, when he's going into the field, he knows he only has rights to the peyras. Abu Bahach, but in this case over here, during the time of Yovel, the adaita the gufe kanachas, the fact is he is going into the field intending to buy the actual field, and he is allowed to dig ditches and whatnot in it. Because during those 50 years, yeah, he's allowed to. Because he bought the Gufa Karka. It's going to be taken away from him in Yovel and returned to the original owner. But the fact of the matter is, he has full rights over it now. So, Eimah Moedulah L'Rabbi Yochanan. Maybe you would think he agrees with Rabbi Yochanan that it actually has to be considered to like Kinyan Aguf. V'yit my Baha, and if you only had the second case, Baha Kam Rabbi Yochanan Ablahach Eimah Moedulah L'Rabbi Yochanan, you would think maybe only in this case, of Yovel, when Yovel is in effect, maybe only then Rabbi Yechonon holds his kikinin aguf, because he has full rights over the land. But in the other case, maybe he agrees with Rish Lakish, because you only went in there knowing that you only have rights to the payers. So therefore you need both cases. Come, let's bring a proof. A Mishnah says, in Bikurim, Hakoina Ilan Vakakoi, if somebody buys from somebody else a tree and the land around it, maybe the Koyin. He brings Bikurim, and he says, the Sukin. So, on the face of it, that land is going to return to the original owner in Yovel, and yet we're saying he's able to say the psukim. That seems to be like Rabbi Yochanan, not like Rish Lakish. The answer is, Hachab Laiskin, it was Macha Eino Yovel Moyeg. Fine, but this could be talking about when Yovel is not in effect anymore. So therefore, even Rabbi Yochanan, even Rish Lakish would agree, it's not just Kinyan Peiris, you actually bought land around the tree itself. So therefore, yeah.
You mean the Yovel is not the day?
There comes a point when Yovel is not in effect anymore, when Shevet Reuben, Rashi said, I'm not on the previous onward, when Shevet Reuben and God and Chatzim and Asher were taken into Golos by Sancheiriv, at that point, Yovel went out of effect. Because Yovel is only in effect when all the Shevatim are living in Eretz Yisrael.
So the Breitzer was after
that. The Breitzer is after that, yeah. Or the Mishnah, actually, it's a Mishnah every Kodemir. Toshma. Come, let's prove from another case. Another Mishnah over there. Hakoina Shnei Ilonis Beset Sadeh or Shachaber. If somebody buys two trees in somebody else's field, now normally the din is when you buy two trees, you don't automatically get land with them. You're entitled to the trees and to the produce of them or whatever. You're not entitled to any particular amount of land. And you have to, except the actual footprint of the two trees, right?
You have to buy a
walkway or whatever, yeah. As opposed to, if you buy three trees, automatically you get some land with them. So the Mishnah says, if you buy two trees, it says Seder Shachaber, maybe they're in a Kodim. You bring the Kodim from the two trees, but you don't say the Psukim because you don't have any land.
That's a question.
Yeah. Which implies Hoshlosha, maybe the Kodim, which implies, but if you bought three, you would be able to bring the Kodim and say the Psukim. So why? Again, the land is going to return in Yovel. And again, the answer is, Hachanami was Manchena Yovel Noyeg. And fine, it could be the same thing. One of the Mepharshim talks about. First of all, why does the Gemara have to ask the question again? It's the same answer as before. And second of all, the Mishnah actually explicitly says there later in that Perek and Bikurim that if you buy three trees, you can bring Bikurim and say the Sukkim. Why does the Gemara have to deduce it? It says if you buy two, implying but if you buy three, why not just say straight out from the Mishnah? It's okay that Ashba says one of the Achronim asks. It's okay that second question that Ashba answers. Okay, sometimes the Gemara does that. Sometimes the Gemara uses an implication from a Mishnah, even though it could have just as well found an explicit Mishnah to that effect. That's the style of the Gemara. But one of the Achronim, I think, the Pharisee Yaakov, maybe it is, I don't remember, says that what did he say? That we should assume that the case of two trees and the case of three trees have to be the same thing. If two trees would be the same thing whether the yovel is in effect or not, because you don't get any land with them. So on the face of it, the three trees thing also has to be whether the yovel is in effect or not.
Redundant.
And if that's the case, not redundant, but it should be parallel. If the Mishnah is telling us two trees no, if the Mishnah is telling us two trees no, implying three trees yes, presumably both of them are talking in the same situation, regardless whether yovel is in effect or whether yovel is not in effect. According to Rish Lakish, when Yovel is in effect, you're not going to, regardless how many trees you bought, even if you bought three and you have land, you're not going to say the Psukim because you don't own that land permanently. Why? And therefore, the Gemara answer is no, you can still answer that fine. The two trees is regardless of the matter whether Yovel is in effect or not, the three trees is only when Yovel is not in effect. However, the Gemara says, the Hashta de Amr of Chista, now that Rav Chista came up and said, Machloitis for Yovel Sheni. The whole machlokas of Rish Lakish and Rabbi Yochanan is only when it comes to the second yovel. Avol, we'll explain in a second what we mean by second yovel. Avol the yovel rishon, but when it comes to the first yovel, divrei hakol mehu v'kodei, everybody agrees that you can bring the korim, that the buyer can bring the korim and say the psukim. Da'kati lo samach da'tayu, because they do not yet have smichus das, they don't yet have a certainty. So I'll explain in a second what the certainty is. Wait. So then, lo kasha, hobi yovel rishon, hobi yovel sheni. Then you don't have a problem. You could say that the case of the three trees itself also depends on whether it's the first yovel or the second yovel. So what do we mean by first and second yovel? Rashi said it means historically. The first yovel after they came into Eretz Yisrael, 64 years after they first crossed the Yarden, because it's been 14 years to conquer Eretz Yisrael, and then they started counting Shemitahs and yovels. So 64 years after they came into Eretz Yisrael was the first yovel. The second yovel is then 50 years after that, etc., etc. What happens, Rashi says, that first yovel, nobody is yet certain that there's going to be this concept of all the fields are going to return to the original owner. Yes, it says in the Torah, but it's never been done before. So when a person sells a field, he sells it intending, figuring it's going to be a permanent sale. All of a sudden, comes yovel, yes, okay, it says in the Torah, but it still, in a way, it says that there wasn't a smichus das, there wasn't a definitive thought in people's minds, yes, I'm only selling this field for 50 years. The second time around already, it's a known thing. It was done last time. It's going to happen again. It's going to keep on happening again. So there's more of a smichus das that when you sell a field, you know you're only selling it temporarily for the 50 years, right? So therefore, so the vart would be then according to Rashi that when it comes to the first yovel, everybody would agree, maybe the Koda, even Rish Lakish, because he would say that when you bought land during those 64 years, you didn't. You didn't know for sure that it's not going to be permanent. So therefore, you bought it. The seller sold it, the buyer bought it, intending for it to be permanent. Therefore, it's kinyan aguf, no question about it. Only after that does it all of a sudden become something which is really only kinyan payrus. And then, according to Rish Lakish, you can. A number of Rishonim asked on that, among other things, why would the Mishnah and the Braises be talking about historical things that happened 1,000 years earlier? The fact is that it's never going to be relevant again. It's never going to be So the Rambam has a different explanation about it. He says Yovel Rishon and Yovel Sheni means the first time within a person's lifetime, the first Yovel or the second Yovel within a person's lifetime. Meaning, so again, if a person sells a field and he knows that if a person sells a field, again, yes, he knows that Yovel is coming years from now, but it's like something in the, you know, something in the distant future. He doesn't really think about it. So therefore, he thinks of it as he's selling the whole field, the Kalka, Guf, Paris, and everything. Only the second Yovel, it's after Yovel, then later on, he goes and sells other fields or buys other fields or whatever, then already we know that that's a, then already he knows that it's a temporary thing. So he knows it's going to be returning in Yovel. Why? Yovel's only 50 years apart. A person can be alive for three Yovels in principle. Why not? There could be a Yovel when a person's 10 years old, and then when he's 60, and then he's 110, you know? Come on, whatever, fine. Two Yovels at least would be very common, yeah.
Very common.
Yeah. Maybe when he's 10, he's 30, it's unlikely. Fine, okay. Should we say that this whole machlokas of Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish about Kinyan Peres and Kinyan Aguf, should we say that it's the same as a machlokas Tanoim? A Braita says, Minayim l'lekech sodom avu v'ikdisha. How do we know a person buys a field from his... Now, okay, so as an introduction to this part, we have to know as follows. The Torah tells us in Parshas B'chukotai that there's two different kinds of cases when a person sells a field. When a person is makdish a field. One case is a person is makdish a field which belongs to him, which belongs to him al-chila. He inherited it from his ancestors, who inherited it from their ancestors going back to when they first came into Eretz Yisrael. That's called Sdei Achuzel. And the din with that field is, if he buys it back from Hektish for Yovel, good, he has it back. If not, what happens is, comes Yovel, it's sold to the Kohanim who are on duty when Yom Kippur of that Yovel year comes, and it never returns to him. That's Steachosa. Then there's a case the Torah talks about, Ste Mikna. If you bought a field from somebody, and then you will Makdish that field, then comes Yovel. It doesn't go to the Kohanim. It goes back to the original owner. That's the field that you bought. So if I have a field that I inherited from my ancestors in Eretz Yisrael and I'm Makdish it, and I didn't buy it back from Hekdish before Yovel, it goes to the Kohanim. But if I bought a field from you, it belonged to your ancestors, and I bought it from you, and then I was Makdish it, comes Yovel, it goes back to you.
To me.
To you, because you're the original owner. So that's stay achuza and stay mikneh, they're called. So, minayin l'lekech sodom avim, how do we know if a person buys a field from his father, v'hekdisha, and he declared it hekdish while his father was alive, v'achakach mes avim, now his father died, and he inherits it. So what happens? Originally, when he was machdish, it was a stay mikneh, because he bought it from his father. Now it becomes a stay achuza. Now it's a field that he inherits. So what's the din of it? So, minayin shtei lefarif stei achuzah. How do we know that it has the din of stei achuzah? That if he does not buy it back from Hekdesh before Yovel, then it's gone. It goes to the Kohenim. How do we know that? Talmud Leimer, the pasuk says, im stei miknase asher loy mistei achuzah. So the pasuk says, if a person has makdish a field that he bought, which is not from the field that he inherits, which implies sodashen, those extra words teach us sodashen eroyal the stei achuzah. It has to be a field that there's no possibility of it becoming a stei achuzah. Yotzazu should really establish as opposed to this one. When his father dies, he's going to inherit it. Therefore, even now, when he bought it while his father was alive, it has the din of Sde'achuzah because it's a potential Sde'achuzah. Because potentially it's in. Give it to Rabbi Yehuda Rav Shimon. Rabbi Meir says differently. No, he says, how do we know if you bought the field from your father, then your father died, and then you were makdish it? How do we know that only then is it considered a stei achuza? Talmud Lomar, im stei miknas asher lo mistei achuza, so d'shein stei achuza, yotzu shi stei achuza. Now, v'ilu, so now let's consider what's the implication of v'ilu, l'Rav Yehuda v'Rav Shimon. Now, according to Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon, so mes ovev achaf esfisha lo tzricha kura. According to them, you don't need a pasuk in that case. So what do we have, in other words? So we have, if you were makdish it while your father was alive, then that's when Rav Yehuda and Rav Shimon are saying it's considered a stei achuza. Because eventually you're going to inherit it. Rav Meir says in that case it's not. It's considered a stei mikneh. When is it considered a stei achuzah if you're makdish it only after your father died? And according to Rabbi Yehuda and Rav Shimon, you don't even need a pasuk for that, obviously. That's stei achuzah because you inherited it first, and then you were makdish it. My law, b'chok ha'mifgi. So isn't that then the underlying machlokes? Did Rav Meir sell kinyan peiros k'kinyan aguf dami? So therefore, Rav Meir figures, let's say, that kinyan peiros is the equivalent of kinyan aguf. It's considered when you bought the field for its peiros. Again, this is when the yovel is in effect. All these dinim are when yovel is in effect. So you bought the field from your father. You're only buying it effectively for the peiros because it's going to return to him in yovel if he's still alive. So you've bought the goof as well. You own the actual karka. You buy the goof. So in this case, when his father died, he's not really inheriting anything more than he had before. He had kinyan goof. He owned the goof of the field before. Now he owns it as an achuzah. So no difference. Therefore, we need a special pasuk to tell us that even though in that case, his father died, he inherited it, which on the face of it, he didn't inherit anything more than he had before. He had the kinyan aguf already, and now he was makdish it. Nevertheless, we have exeris akasim telling us that it's considered stei achuzah. Even though you would think, when he bought it, he bought the goof already. He hasn't gained anything by inheriting it. So why should it be considered a stei achuzah? Nevertheless, the pasuk is telling us that it is.
And that's the basis for the true opinion?
Well, that's what a mayor is saying. That's what a mayor should be arguing.
He bought it from his father,
He bought it from his father, but by buying it from his father, he bought the goof. At that point, he has 100% ownership of it. When his father dies, there's no more, it doesn't change anything. And yet, the pasuk is telling us, there is a pasuk, that it does change it, because it was potentially a stei achuzah all along. But it means that he owned kinyan aguf.
Maybe it was not stei achuzah, it was kinyan aguf. The fact that his father died made it kinyan.
No, but that's the point. In other words, but when his father dying, according to the mayor, if we say kinyan peiros k'kinyan aguf, he hasn't gained anything by that. So he has exactly the same ownership of it now that he did as he did before. Fine, that's what I'm saying. There's a concept, fine. But Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon sabri kinyan peiros lo k'kinyan aguf dami. Whereas Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would hold that kinyan peiros is not k'kinyan aguf. Therefore, this person, when his father died, is when he fully inherits it. Up to now, he only had Peres. Now he has Yoreth Midyashin, So therefore, if his father died and he inherited it and then he was makdish it, of course, you don't need a pasuk. There's no chiddush in that. Of course, once he has the guf, then it's Dei Achuzah, and then, yeah. We only need the pasuk that even though he bought it from his father, he only had kinyan peiros, and when he was makdish it, he still only had kinyan peiros. Nevertheless, because now after his father died, he has kinyan aguf. Therefore, now it's considered a stei achuzah. So you would see that it's the same machlokas as Rabbi Yechon and Rashi. The answer is, Amar Nachmi, Tuch lo'olam emalach ba'alma chasavi Rabbi Yehuda Rabbi Shimon kinin peres kinin agufta. I mean, not necessarily. We could argue that even Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon would agree with Rabbi Yochanan that kinin peres is kinin aguf. In this case, though, Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon have a special reason to say differently because they found a pasuk. Namely, if the pasuk only wanted to teach us this din that we're discussing over here, this machlokes of Deus Yosef Meir, if it only wanted to teach us this din, that a field which is Sdeimus Nase, which potentially is also able to be Sdeach Uzase, that it has the din of Sdeach Uzase, then let it just say, which is not his inheritance. My misdei achuzase. What's the extra word misdei? It means So even if he was makdish it while his father was alive, even though it's true he only has in other words, they say we can learn both situations from it because the pasuk could have just it could have said asher lo yachuzasei, and on top of that it says asher lo misdei yachuzasei. So from that we learn that again in their case even if he was makdish it and then his father died and then now we're saying different than before we thought he had only kinyan peiros and now he gained kinyan aguf. They were saying, no, the pasuk is teaching us, even though he had kinyan aguf before, and he has kinyan aguf now, but because of the double extra words in the pasuk, because it didn't have to say anything, and it said achuzase, therefore we can learn from it that even in this case, where he had kinyan aguf before, and he has kinyan aguf now, nevertheless, though, it still is considered achuzase, it still has the din of achuzase and not sdei mikna. Because Reb Meir wouldn't hold like that. Reb Meir would say we only learn the one thing from the pasuk. I'm going to be answered. He loved Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Kinyan Peres Kinyan Aguf Dami. If Rabbi Yochanan had not said his opinion that Kinyan Peres is considered Kinyan Aguf, he would not be able to find his hands and feet in the Beis Medrash. In other words, he'd be contradicting himself with another din that he says. I saw a couple of verifach why the expression Yod of Verdaglov, one of them is we learned in Soita a couple of months ago that Moshe Rabbeinu has to daven for Yehuda, that he should be able to be brought into the Masifta Dirakia because he was in Cherem for the whole thing that he had promised to Yaakov, that the V'chatosil Abitol HaYomim, so Moshe had to specially daven for him. So Moshe daven Yod of Rav Loi, that he should have the ability, L'mitrach B'shmaita, he should have the ability to discuss in Halachas with the other people, with the other Neshamas in the Yeshiva Shamayla. So hands represent the ability to argue. Raglov represents the ability to come to a proper conclusion, like you're able to stand on your feet. So here, he wouldn't find Yoda for Raglov, he wouldn't be able to argue, and he wouldn't be able to come to any conclusion. I think Ben Yehoyada said that one, I don't remember.
What was his
Yehoda, no, not such an Avera, but he had said to Yaakov that if I don't bring Binyamin back safely, some of the Farshim point out, actually, in a way, he didn't. Binyamin stayed there in Mitzrayim, and the other brothers went and told Yaakov, and everybody came down to Mitzrayim. So yes, Yaakov and Binyamin met up again, but not back in Eretz Yisrael. He didn't bring him to Yaakov and Leah anyway.
They had a whole discussion that coming. He said, "I'm Yosef," and then they went back.
Doesn't say that all of them did, though, necessarily.
The whole thing was...
Why not? He wants to have a reunion with his brother. I know there are some Mephoreshim who are living that way, but besides that also, the Gemara says differently. The Gemara says that a person takes on himself an onesh like that, even al-tnai, it still has a certain effect. Even though because he said, even though he fulfilled his promise, nevertheless, that still had an effect. Until Moshe Rabbeinu had davened for him. Why is that? To Amar Rav Asi, Amar Rav Yechon, because we have another din that Rav Asi said in the name of Rav Yechon, and we had this before earlier in our message.
No, to the Beit Midrash.
What?
That he couldn't go to the Beit Midrash.
No, that Yehuda, therefore, yeah. So we learned over there in Soita that Yehuda's bones were rolling around in his coffin all the years until Moshe Rabbeinu davened for him, and then his body got back together, but they wouldn't allow him into the Masifta Dirakia until Moshe continued davening for him, Ve'alamei Tivienu, then he's not able to join in the discussion, Yad Avrozloi, he's not able to come to a proper conclusion, the last Sukhi Shemaita, Liberty Uchza, Ve'ezim Itzarav Tihya. In Soita, we had it in the first Derech, yeah. So, Rabbi Asi says in the name of Rabbi Yechanan, Ha'achan Shechoku, when brothers divide their inheritance from their father, L'kuchasein, they're considered like buyers, because we had a discussion before, we had a discussion about 10 blocks ago about Breira, or 20 blocks ago on Chafei, we had a discussion about Breira. We said over there that in things that are Isa Ein Breira, we can't say that the portion that the person got is considered retroactively was the portion that was meant for him as soon as his father died. It's considered they bought from each other. And therefore, Mahzirin Zelos at Yovel, and therefore they have to return it to each other at Yovel. We talked about that, and we talked about when we discussed this a couple of weeks ago. What exactly does that mean? Does that mean they have to switch plots of land? Does it mean that temporarily for Yovel they give it all up, and then after Yovel they go back to the original parts? Whatever it is, the Isaf Dadak Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dummy. Now, if you're going to tell, Rashi learns over here according to the explanation that they switch parts, basically. So originally, among the sons, Reuven got this part, Shimon got this part, Levi got this part. Now we're switching, and Reuven may wind up with this part, and Shimon may wind up with this part, etc. So, the Isaf Dadak Lavka Kinyan Aguf Dummy. So if you were to think, like a Shlokish hold, that Kenyan Paris is not the Kinyan Aguf, Loy Mashkachas, the Maisi Bikurim, then how would you have, who would be able to bring Bikurim? According to the whole reason why you can't bring the Korim and say the Pesukim, according to the Shlokish, is because you don't own the actual land. Well, in this case, nobody owns the actual land. El Chad Bar Chad Ad Yeshua Ben Nun. Only if you have an only son, the son of an only son, etc., going back all the generations to Yeshua. Because if there were ever two or more brothers involved, then at some point it's considered they bought the land from each other when they divided up the property, and now they're flipping it around. So therefore, nobody owns land in Eretz Yisrael proper. Everybody's considered to be a buyer. Necessarily, therefore, Rabbi Yechanan would have to say that Kinyan Peres must be Kinyan Aguf, and therefore we don't have that issue. Because otherwise his two dinim wouldn't fit together. Tosfos has a long discussion over here, and Tosfos starts over in time, starts off with the same question: how do we find Yodenu Ranagleinu Bevesa Medrash? The din is, the Gemara is going to say in a minute, the din is like a Shlokish in this case, Kinyan Peres is not the Kinyan Aguf, but the din is also Ein Breira. So you're back to the question. And if Ein Breira, then it's considered the buyers, the brothers are buyers. They do have to split up. They do have to redivide the land every Yovel. And according to the Shlokish, in that case, maybe they inherit it. So you're back to the question: how is anybody able to bring the Korim? And Tosfos has a long discussion about it. Maybe when we're saying the halacha is like the Shlokish, it means only in connection here with Bikurim, not in general in halacha. That's how Tosfos discusses. There's a different discussion that Rambam paskins like the Shlokish that Kinyan Peres is not the Kinyan Aguf across the board, but he also paskins that the brothers have to return the land to each other in Yovel, and he also paskins that people have to bring Bikurim and say Pesukim, not even if they're an only son, the son of an only son. So they talk about how to fan for the Rambam in it, that maybe even though it's true the brothers have to redivide the land in Yovel, nevertheless, it's not so much because we're considering them like buyers. They have more of an ownership of the land, even though it's true they have to return it to each other in Yovel, they have more of an ownership of the land than a regular person who buys from somebody else during Yovel. After all, they're coming from a koyach of Yerusha rather than buying, which is a stronger thing. Amar Rava, Kro Masnitzim Mesailei L'Rish Lakish. We have a Tosif and we have a Braitha that both support Rish Lakish's opinion. Kro, we have a Tosif that says the Mishpar Shnei Tvor is Yim Kalach. The Tosif says that when Yovel is in effect, when you're selling a field, you're only selling the number of crops until the Yovel. Implying you're only selling the crops. You're not selling the actual karka. So therefore, that fits more with Rish Lakish's opinion. Okay, the Chassam Sofer talks about it's not definitively against Rabbi Yochanan. On the other hand, because you know, the fact of the matter is you do own the land insofar as you're allowed to dig ditches in it and whatever. So it's not. I mean, it is true you're selling a certain number of crops, but nevertheless, you are selling the actual karka to a certain extent also. Still, the Lashon of the Pasuk still fits more with Rish Lakish. And Masnisa, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, B'chor Notel Pishnayim B'sadach HaZeres L'Av V'Yovel. If you have a field which a father sold it to somebody else when Yovel is in effect, now the father dies, and the children are inheriting the property, so they don't inherit that one because it's still in somebody else's hand. When it comes back to them in Yovel, the Bechor is going to get a double portion in it. Now, what's the point? If we were to say that Kinyan Peres is Kinyan Aguf, then it means that land did not at all belong to the estate at the time when the father died. And now, it's going to eventually, But there's a din, which we've learned before, we learned about it in Ksuba setting, that a Bechor does not get a double portion b'ra'i k'v muchzuk. He only gets a double portion of what actually belongs to the estate right now, not what potentially is going to come to the estate later on. In this case, in Yerbo. Only if we say, like, Rishlokesh, Kinyan Peiris, Lach, Kinyan Aguf. Therefore, the other buyer never owned the goof of the karka. He only owned the Peiris anyway. The goof of the karka still belongs to the father all along. Therefore, yes, it makes sense that the Bechor gets a double portion of it. Amar Abaya, Nachtinan, we know the Kabbalah, that Baal B'Nichseish Tzarech Hashah. What happens, given that now we've established that according to Rish Lakish, Kinyan Peres, if Kinyan Aguf, is not Kinyan Aguf rather, then what happens when we go back to the case of a husband in his wife's Nichsimalog, he only has Kinyan Peres because she owns the actual land. Therefore, Baal B'Nichseish Tzarech, therefore, if a husband is coming to argue in Beis Din against somebody else about the Tarka, he needs an official power of attorney from her that he's entitled to. Because otherwise, the other guy can tell him, what business do I have with you? Your wife is the one who owns the karka. I'll argue with her in Beis Din. You have no say in the matter. So therefore, he needs an official power of attorney. It doesn't matter. Because he only has Kinyan Peiris, which is not Kinyan Aguf, therefore, in order to be able to argue on her behalf in Beis Din, to be able to be a plaintiff for in Beis Din, he'd have to have a hasha. He'd have to have a power of attorney from her. However, Gemara says, this is only talking about, though, if the argument with the other guy is not about the peiris, but rather about the actual karka itself. But if it is regarding the peiris, let's say it's regarding the peiris and the land, once he has the ability to argue in Beis Din on behalf of peiris, because the peiris he owns, then he also has the ability, even without a hasha, to argue about the land. The other guy can't tell him what about. If it's only for the land, he needs the house shop. But if it's paid us and the land, then once he's able to do one, then he can do the other one, and the other guy can't tell him that I have no business with you on the character. Because the logic is once he's doing one, then he can do the other.
The interest in one is
nothing. It doesn't matter, though. Once he has an interest, once he has the ability to argue with him about one, then it's it. Continuing on the topic, our parak is going to continue on the topic of things that were done with Netikun Olam. It's going to start out with cases of Nezikin, and Tosus points out, really, Nezikin ought to belong in Seder Nezikin, but it's just a continuation of the Tikkun Olam business. Tosus points out the other way around, by the way, there's a Peres in Bava Basra, which is Seder Nezikin, which really, by rights, ought to belong in our Masechta in Gittin, namely the Peres called Debt Pasher, which deals with how you write a plain debt or a folded debt. However, Tosus says, because of the parak over there that talks about shtaris, and the genome of shtaris as a whole belong in Bava Basra, therefore they stuck that in there as well. Mishnah says, Hanizokin shaman lahem v'idis. Somebody who was a nizak, somebody who somebody else damaged his property or whatever, shaman lahem v'idis. We figure out the value of the nezik, and we give them out of idis, out of the best quality land that belongs to the mazik. So in Aramaic, idis means the best. They bring from a some portion bring from a targum from Targum Yonason, I think, some place that uses the word idis as a translation of best. Or b'alchoy v'beninus, a b'alchoy collects from beninus, from average targa. Or ksubas isha b'ziburis, and a woman's ksuba gets collected from ziburis, from the lowest quality. Why all these three? We'll talk about as we go through the next couple of days of Gemara. Rav Meir and Ach Ksuba Tishim Beinus. Rav Meir says that no, a woman's Ksuba is collected from Beinus. This is one of the things from Tikkun Olam, and the Gemara is going to discuss it. Another din, Ein Nifroim and Chasim Shabbat, and Machim Shiyash and Chasim and Echorin. If you have, Reuven owes Shimon money. Reuven has defaulted on the debt, Shimon now has to go and collect it. Now, Reuven has, there's land that he owned at the time, that's called Bnei Chorin. And then there's land which previously, after he had borrowed the money, at some point he sold them to Levi. That's called the Chasim Mishabadim. Shimon is not allowed to collect from the Chasim Mishabadim as long as there is the Chasim Bnei Chorin available. As long as Reuven has any land of his own, he can't go to Levi and start collecting from him. Now, Afilahen Ziburis, even if all Reuven has left at this point is Ziburis, the Baal Chayv can't say, look, I'm supposed to collect from Beninus. You previously sold your Beninus to Levi. I'm going to go collect from him. Nothing doing. Another din, this is also a Patrick Island. Another din, in the frame minichsi yisaimim elaminam ziburis, you can only collect from the property of yisaimim, not only yisaimim, but heirs in general, only from ziburis. So again, Reuven owed Shimon money. Reuven died. now his heirs have taken over the field. Shimon, instead of when Reuben was alive, he would have been able to collect from Benjamin. Now that Reuben is dead, he can only collect from Zebulun. The least valuable, yeah. Another din, Ein Metzia L'Achilas Peres, we don't take out for paying back for fruit that was eaten, which means, so Rashi says you have a situation like this. Reuben steals a field from Shimon. Reuben sells it to Levi. Levi goes and plants the field. The fruit starts growing over there. Shimon, who the field originally belonged to, who was stolen from him, goes to Beis Din and takes away the field from Levi, because it was mine after all. Well, Levi has to be reimbursed. He put expenses into it. So he does have to pay him for the expenses he put into improving it. Then in turn, Levi is going to go back to Reuben and who sold him the field with Achrayus, who sold it to him that if somebody takes it away from you, I'm going to reimburse you. So he goes back to him and collects from him. Now there's two things he's going to be collecting. There's going to be the value of the field and there's going to be the value of the peiros in it. The reimbursement for how much he spent on planting those payers that he got from Shimon, the original owner. But reimbursement for the field itself and for the payers that he needs to get from Reuben. We're saying reimbursement for the field itself he can get even from Reuben and the Shabbatim, even from fields that Reuben had previously sold to other people. But when it comes to getting reimbursed for the payers, that he can only collect from Bnei Chorin, only from property that actually belongs to Reuben right now. So that's Achilas payers. Well, the Shvach Karkois is for the improvement of the Karka, same thing. Let's say he improved it, let's say they're planting trees in it or fertilizing it or whatever, similar to Paris. So you don't take those out, Menachasim. Well, the Mazin and Ishur Bonus, you also don't take for the upkeep, for the food and clothing and whatnot of a wife or of daughters. A wife meaning after the husband died, the Amana, or the daughters. We said that the husband has the responsibility to the estate, rather has the responsibility to support the daughters until they're old enough to get married. You don't take those out in the chasam shabbat. Again, all these things I'm a pnei tikkun olam. All these things I'm a pnei tikkun olam, as we'll talk about in subsequent blah. And one more, b'hamotzi metzia lo yishav ha'mepnei tikkun olam. If somebody finds a lost object and he returns it, and the owner says, you didn't return everything, you kept some of it for yourself, lo yishav ha'mepnei, we don't make him swear and base, then again mepnei tikkun olam.
Because otherwise,
why would the person wouldn't return anything? Exactly. So we'll talk about. We'll learn in a few days when we talk about it in the Gemara. We're not talking about a simple case where, for example, you know, the guy returns $1,000 and the other guy claims to you that there were 2,000 and there were 2,000, and that's just, there's no reason to say that he should have to swear on that. We're talking about the Gemara. Will tell us
right.
So the Gemara we'll talk about. We're talking about a case where there were two purses tied together and he returned only one of them. On the face of it, if he found one, he must have found the other as well. And yet, the paycheck and other, we're not making him swear. Somewhere or other, I read a cute story about the Rav of Lodz of 100-odd years ago, Rav Chaim Meisel, who was known to be a very, very kluger yid. So one time it happens, a yid in his town finds a purse in the street, a very expensive-looking purse. He finds 1,000 rubles in it. There's an address in there, a local Goyish account. He goes and returns it to him,
for the purse.
And the purse, instead of being grateful for it, starts yelling at the guy, there were 2,000 rubles in there, et cetera, and he takes him to court. Kitzer, the Rav tells the lawyer, the Rav has a chat with the lawyer ahead of time. The lawyer says like this, look, you know, that's fine. You know, we'll have the part swear in court. He swears that there were 2,000 rubles in it. Okay, he's sworn. He lost the purse with 2,000 rubles. On the other hand, this yid says he found one with only 1,000 rubles. And look, he has to be honest, otherwise he could have kept the whole thing for himself. You know what? Obviously, the purse that he found is not the same one that the count lost. They let him keep it for himself. Vakachava. So the count got his lesson, yes. Okay. So the Gemara asks, what do you mean with Nei Tikkun HaOlam? What do you mean that a Nizit collects from Edis only with Nei Tikkun HaOlam? Doraisa. It's a Din Doraisa that he collects this coming week's parasha. This is Meita Sadeh or Meita Karma Yishalah. The passage says that if a person lets his animals into somebody else's field and they damage over there, he has to pay from the best of his field or the best of his vineyard. So what kind of Tikkun HaOlam? Yes, but the words in our Mishnah are only needed according to Rabbi Shmuel. He says that Rabbi Shmuel would say, now when we say Meitav Sadehu or Meitav Karmai, best field or whose best vineyard? Are we talking about that we have to... No, it's damaged, though. It's not the best anymore. Are we talking about the Mazik's best field they have to give away to the Nizek? Or to the value of it? So if he damaged $100 worth of... Then he has to give $100 worth of field from the best part of his field? Or does it mean we look at the at what's the best... we look at the best of the Nizek. It should be equal to the best property that the Nizek has. So Rabbi Shmuel says, Midaraisa, suppose that the Mazik has... imagine you have a case, the Nizek's best property is the Nizek. Remember, you have Idus, Beinus, and Zibudus. You have three qualities of land. But you can have, one person's Zibudus is another person's Idus, right? You can have, so let's say you can have the Nizek. His best quality land is only as good as the worst quality land of the Mazik. So the Mazik is this rich guy, he has really, really high quality land, an average and bad quality, and what he has as bad quality is equivalent to the best that the Nizek has. So Midaraisa, that's all he'd be entitled to. He'd be entitled to what's equivalent to his own best land, which would be the Zibudus of the Mazik. So therefore, Kamash Molim, Tikna Olam, Shamin, and Bidimazik. So therefore, though, it's Tikna Olam, because we don't want, like this, the Mazik is going to say, so what do I have to lose? All I'm going to lose is the Buddhist anyway. So like this, we take away from his Aegis, we take Tikna Olam.
The Torah doesn't say
that. Yeah. My Rabbi Shmuel, what's the din of Rabbi Shmuel? The Tanya, the Gunner of Raisa. When the Pasuk says, Mate of Sadeh or Mate of Kami Yishalim, it means Mate of Sadeh shall Nizik or Mate of Kami shall Nizik. Rabbi Shmuel, it means that you look at the best quality of what the Nizik has, and you take that. You take an equivalent quality away from the Mazik. Did Rabbi Shmuel, Rabbi Akiva, no. Lord Bohakosov, Ella Ligwis, when he's up in Minaidis, no, the Pasuk is coming to be machmer on him, that he has to pay from his best.
But Ligwis, it's not being machmer to tell the Mazik he has the Mazik that he has to pay from his best.
Yeah, that is being machmer on him. Like this, he could have, according to Rabbi Shmuel, he could have paid only from his Ziburis, and now he has to pay from his Ziburis.
What is
it,
as good as the guy is?
It depends who's the Nizak. If the Nizak is an Ashir, it's a Kula. And if the Nizak is...
No. So that's what Rabbi Shmuel... Okay, you're right. It could come out. You're fine. Okay, wait. You know what? We'll get to that later in the Gemara. Says only that the Nizakin should get from Idis. The Kavachoyma lehektish. And how much more so for hektish? What that means, we'll talk about the Gemara tomorrow. So therefore, that's what Rabbi Shmuel is saying. You go according to the Nizik, Midaraisa, and only Mifnei Tikkun Olam do you do from the Mazik.
Where does he get that from?
Well, Tikkun Olam, that's what our Mishnah is saying. But that's the question. Well, where he gets it from, we're going to have a pasuk, but I think we'll leave that for tomorrow. But the question is, basically, Rabbi Shmuel, Achal Shmena, Mishalam Shmena, Achal Chushim, Mishalam Shmena, what's the logic of it here, according to Rabbi Shmuel? You're telling me, if the guy's animal went into the Nizik's field and ate, fine, so it ate up the best of his field, so fine, it makes sense you want to reimburse him with a plot of land that's of equal quality. But if you're telling me, Ocho Kosha Mishalim Shmeina, what's the logic that if it ate one of the worst parts of his field, that you should give him the best part, that you should give him something equivalent to the best part of his field? Why?
Unless you take care of your cattle.
No, but it's still only fair that you should only pay the amount of the Nezik.
He won't get to watch his own
animal. No, that's not the point, though. The point is, you can't make him pay more than the value of the Nezik. So, let's say, for example, within the Nizik's land, you have plots which are, $10 an acre, and then you have plots which are $20 an acre. What's the logic that if the animal ate a plot which is $10 an acre, that you're going to make the other guy give him a plot of land, an acre, which is worth $20? He's paying more for what they poured, more than what he damaged.
Let me ask you a question. The relevance of the discussion is only if he has to pay back in nature rather than in money. If he pays back in money, it doesn't matter.
Ah, that is true, and actually the Gemara discusses this in Bava Kamma. When we talk about here collecting in land, there's two possibilities. One possibility is if the Mazik doesn't have anything else to pay out of, only land, then we're talking about what we're... The other possibility, I think there are some Mepharshim who learn, that even if the Mazik has other property, the Nizik is entitled to say, I don't want Metaltelin, I want land. And if that's the case, then we have to discuss what kind of land.
You might be the fruit, the land doesn't get mazik, you just have to replant it.
But still, how much is the fruit going to be worth that grows in this area?
But how can you pay him with karka? If an apple, 10 apples cost $5, how are you going to pay back with land?
So you pay back a certain amount of land, which is worth that, you have a piece of land, which is worth that amount, that's what we're going to say. So the answer is Hochma Iskin, Kuncha Ochla Aruga Bena Aruga. The question is that how are you making the guy pay back more than what he damaged? He damage is worth X amount. And that's on the face of it. If according to Rabbi Shmuel, you're always saying you want to look at the best quality land that the Nizik owns.
Say less of the best and more of the worst.
That's not what we seem to be saying though. That on the face of it, that's not what everybody's saying. That's what we're asking. So the answer is Hochamais Omar Vidivov and Hochamais Kidin, then Shaochla Aruga Ben Haaruga, it's fine. But let's say, for example, the animal ate up in one plot of land among a bunch of others, meaning there's a whole field over there. Some parts are better, some parts are. And Aruga means a plot of land. So there's a bunch of plots within the field over there. The animal ate up one. Some of them are better quality, some of them are worse quality. The lawyer didn't. We don't know which one it was that he ate, because the guy came back. And the owner came back a week later, and he found a couple of them may be damaged, maybe one by one animal, one by another. He doesn't know which one, yeah. Therefore, Dibashalam may be made up. Therefore, we should assume that he ate from the best quality one, and therefore, we pay him in best quality. Amar Rava, what do you mean? So what are you telling me? If we knew that he had only eaten the bad quality one, he would only have to pay back bad quality. Hashtag the lawyer didn't Mashalam Shemana. What do we say? Because you don't know, you should have to pay back the best one. I might have another Maya. Let the mazik argue. You have to bring proof that my animal ate this best quality one.
If an animal came in,
let's say for example, I don't know. You could have, let's say for example, one of them was eaten by an animal and the other one was destroyed by a storm or something. I don't know. Whatever. The point is, you don't know.
Wouldn't you get proof? Very
odd. That's you'd have to find Adam or whatever. Yeah, you know. So Ella Amar Rav Acha bar Yaakov. So rather, Rav Acha bar Yaakov says, "Hocha Ma'askinen, we're going to try to idus the nizik kisiburus the mazik." We're talking about the case, like we were saying before, that the nizik's idus, his best quality land, was only the equivalent of the ziburus of the mazik. So Rabbi Shmuel suffered with the nizik sheminen. So in that case, Rabbi Shmuel would hold that. So therefore, so what do we do? So it's true. We do look at
the
poor guy. So what we do is like this: we do figure out the actual value of what was damaged. Then what we do like this, okay, so here Rashi learns according to the explanation that we're talking about the mazik says I have no money to pay, all I have is land. So therefore what you do is, you're going to be, not your house, we're going to be giving you land equivalent to the value of what was damaged. Now, the mazik is going to argue, my worst land is just as good as your best land, so let me just give you that. I'll give you $10 worth of my best land. Whereas the Nizik is arguing, no, you have land which is worth $20 an acre, digits. So instead, give me a half acre of that. Instead of giving me 1 acre of Ziburis, give me a half acre of Idis, yeah. So therefore, Rabbi Shmuel suffered with the Nizik Shemin. So Rabbi Shmuel would say that Midaraisa, we just go according to the Nizik. So therefore, yes, he's able to give him his own Ziburis, which happens to be the equivalent of the Nizik's best. And fine, that's all you're entitled to. Only because of Tekon Olam do we say differently. But Rabbi Akiva suffered with the Mazik Shemin, whereas Rabbi Akiva would say, we go according to the Mazik, we make him give out of his best field. But yeah, it won't be, obviously it won't be more than the value of the Nezik, it'll be a smaller amount of land to make up for that.